Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Well, even how, like, the whole accounting force and keeping track of everything is a lavish waste of resources.
Right.
It's a way of releasing it, just keeping track of it.
Now, how does that relate to his surrealistic writing and his sexual excess or something? I haven't read enough of Bataille to experience it, but he's also known as quite a perverse pornographic writer. Is that right?
Yeah. He wrote some, I guess, at the time, pretty excessive pornographical erotic novels. He was a librarian, I think. Yeah.
Right. Now, was that a metaphor for including energies that rational economy wouldn't allow?
Yeah, he would say sex. Sexual activity
with the category of
reproduction.
Sex worker? He would agree with the category of sex worker, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, well, the French are pretty open with that.
Yeah.
Is this at all getting into the Marxist statement of the means of production doesn't recognize the labor and doesn't reward the laborer, or is that completely off?
Yeah, these guys are lefties. They were, I think, they were eccentric lefties.
But he kind of sidesteps Marxism.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So what do you think, Carol, that Marx said that?
Bataille's saying something about energy is not recognized. And does he mean by energy the energy of the worker, the labor? And he's trying to ignore Marx.
Maybe. So Marx said the worker will take over in the end.
Mm. Or should take over. I don't know if he said will, because he kept finding out that it wasn't going to happen.
Well, he said it would be a dictatorship. Eventually it would take over, which in a way it did with the unions and the mafias, with the Teamsters and all that. The working man took over some levers of industry. Mm. And that's the dictatorship of the proletariat, which Marx said was a phase. I don't know what comes after that.
So is Bataille really saying anything?
Well, a lot of people think he is. He got retrieved over the last 30 years as a writer, a thinker. I mean, that's why Gnosko has to know about him and compare him to Mauss, who was an anthropologist, a big influence on Baudrillard. Mm-hmm. And Mauss made the big deal out of the significance of the gift of the emperor giving away, what's that word?
Potlatch.
Potlatch, yeah. So Marx, you're saying Marx is for the worker, but see, I'm not getting what you're pointing out. Come on, Carol. Explain.
Me?
What?
You're talking to me?
Yeah.
No, I was just wondering, because I don't know Bataille, but I read a tiny bit of Marx, so I'm just wondering if Bataille is what he's saying has anything to do with Marx and his whole thesis.
Well, what did Marx say?
That labor is not being recognized. And
is that true, Jason? Labor was not recognized? Yeah, maybe.
From a Marx.
Well, the value of labor
because
wasn't accounted for in the equation.
Yeah, the value of labor.
Because the bourgeoisie had the production, and they were sucking up all the surplus value.
Yeah,
creating.
They were hijacking it. So
yeah.
So in Baudrillard, Marx said that the workers will win, though. They will inevitably take over, right? Isn't that what his main point was?
Yeah. Yeah, they would institute socialism and then eventually communism.
Right. So I always like to bring in McLuhan because he said Marx didn't recognize the effects of software communism, you know, the telegraph era and then later media, electric media. What is Bataille missing? What is Baudrillard missing in the electric media? They're pretty good. Baudrillard's pretty good at, you know, knowing what McLuhan said.
Well, Jason, what I heard was that we're basing our economic or the description of our economy or our economic development on on the premise that our resources are limited.
Mm-hmm. That's the classical economics.
That's classical.
What he says, the restrictive economy.
Right. And so he's suggesting that we look outside, that we don't base it on limited, that we are limited, that the resources are limited. Is that?
Yeah, he tries to extend the sphere of economics to the whole biology of the planet instead of just like breaking it down into different markets and economics is really good at separating stuff. Like they have like externalities is a huge part of economics where they don't take the cost of the effects of their operation.
And does he make some sort of relationship with that, you know, that the ground is that our resources are limited or that we are limited so that if there is a surplus, the surplus is wasted. The surplus or the energy, the profit, anything that is created in addition to these limited resources should be made more productive or should be used more productively?
No. He's flipping the whole idea of what productive means. Like he says, here's another quote. The title is "The Superabundance of Biochemical Energy and Growth." And then he goes on to say that as a rule, an organism has at its disposal greater energy resources that are necessary for the operations that sustain life, functional activities and in animals, essential muscular exercise, the search for food, etc., is evident from functions like growth and reproduction. Neither growth nor reproduction could be possible if plants and animals did not normally dispose of an excess. The very principle of living matter requires that the chemical operations of life, which demand an expenditure of energy, be gainful and productive of surpluses.
Okay, so I'm looking at your chat, what you posted in chat. The wasting of this energy is luxury. The form and role luxury assumes in a society are characteristics of that society. The accursed share refers to this excess destined to waste, or destined for waste.
Yeah.
And an organism's growth or expansion always runs up against limits and becomes impossible. So to me, that's implying that, the way we're using this, the energy that's created is wasteful.
Say that again.
When the quote, "the accursed share" refers to this excess destined for waste. That when he terms the wasting of energy as luxury, is that the way we're using this excess is unproductive or negative.
Yeah, it's a perceptual problem. You're saying, look, our accounting, or visual space in McLuhan terms, is missing the unaccounted for energy. So in the 20s, when radio started putting out information where instead of me giving you an apple, which you'll eat and I won't have anymore, you'll give me an orange. So we share an object. That's normal trade. Then if we're all listening to the radio, we're all sharing it and we're not losing anything. You know, I don't have, we're all, the radio show is made, we're all experiencing it, and it's not a matter of, I ate the radio show and I'm sorry I can't give any to you. I heard it all first, used it all up. McLuhan recognized the communism, the sharing going on in the information market that could not be measured in the old terms of given gain and loss.
And could not be repaid. Yeah.
That's where you get the psychological problem of how do you repay all this abundance coming out of NBC or, you know, the radio show. Yeah. But just go back to, it sounds like Bataille was noticing this, but putting into his perverse librarian backwardness, and he was just saying, look, there's a lot more wealth being created, and it's regarded as excess, but excess is good. Why don't we incorporate the excess? It's natural in nature, right? He says that all the biochemical processes have excess. It's natural. And so, Jason, that point before you get onto it, because what is radio doing to economy? And McLuhan said, because the accountants couldn't absorb all the wealth that radio and movies were giving for relatively no cost to the consumer, it collapsed the accounting books, so they called it a depression. And then they get even conspiracy. You know, Peggy Mellon's grandfather or uncle, Andrew Mellon, Secretary of the Treasury, fucking declares it's a fucking problem and collapses the economy because they couldn't fit in the books and they couldn't keep the old standards of who was wealthy and who wasn't. If you start including excess, then it blurs about what wealth actually is. So that is an environmental effect. Then you got all these different interpretations of it. McLuhan was one. Well, you say, well, media environments make people be literate and individualistic, and they got to have competition. So he looked at a deep psychology that resisted the noticing the freedom of the radio environment. Okay, I'll just say that. Then there's other schools of thought. What were we going to say, Gene?
No, it's Madeline. I read an article a couple years ago, I think. I don't remember who wrote it. This futurist guy. You'd know the name if I could just think of it. But he was describing the Depression, which he lived through, and how he noticed that all the resources were still there, and the means of distribution were in place, but no one had a job. So it was like this fake scenario or this crisis that was manufactured
by the
accounting
paper people.
Systems.
Yeah. Is this something Bucky Fuller noticed? Is he talking about Bucky Fuller?
No, it wasn't Fuller. I can't remember. I think, yeah, I don't remember his name.
Toffler?
No.
Robert Theobald?
I think his name started with an S.
Who's the guy who did Creative Destruction? It was like Schlumberger or something. Forget his name. Yeah, anyways. Okay, so, there's the perceptual thing. And then people say, look, we got all these people. They can just start doing it. And you had movements where the unions, they took over some of the collapsed plants in the 70s, and some of them turned into businesses or some didn't. So McLuhan said there was the Hawthorne experiment where these guys, they wanted to measure, I think, how much they were doing under time conditions or something. And they noticed they were super productive, and it didn't make sense. And I can't remember the step-by-step, but they decided that the very fact that the workers were being watched for what the scientist's purpose was made them work better, just because someone was paying attention to them.
The Hawthorne experiment.
Yeah, the Hawthorne effect or experiment. That was interesting. And so I think McLuhan used to say, if you declared everything bankrupt but didn't tear it down, after a while, everybody would start going to factories they like working in anyways. You wouldn't need – they just have the human desire to do something every day, and work could be motivated by that, not that you have to get money to pay your rent. And people have seen that many times over the last 100 years, but we don't know how to get to that group recognition. Of getting
well,
rid
that's
of
the idea
space.
Behind the guaranteed income, too, isn't it? That people, like, naturally want to make stuff and do things.
Yeah, maybe.
Create stuff. And if you just take the worry out, people
They'll
will
do stuff anyway.
Do stuff, yeah.
Right. And the that's why I said Robert Theobald. He was the thinker for the guaranteed income in the 60s that McLuhan used to talk about. Robert Theobald. But the humans, so the conservatives know humans are lazy and sinful. They'll start not showing up, or only half of them show up, and then you won't be able to get it done, and it would just be, I don't know, some kind of slow production. And we don't know if that's true, and we won't let society take the chance. So maybe society has ground down right now, and whoever gets things going, they'll survive whatever they make up to do. They'll stay alive. We may be in that situation now. That's why people don't vote. It's not relevant, the management of society. Anyways, but yeah, you want to read your next?
Go ahead.
Yeah, this transition's nice too. The consequences of this situation do not easily enter into our calculations. We calculate our interests, but this situation baffles.
Isn't that what I just said? What I just said. The consequences of this situation doesn't translate into what? What did you say?
We calculate our interests, but this situation baffles us. The very word interest is contradictory with the desire at stake under these conditions.
No, but the very first sentence, we start off, the consequences of something.
Of this situation do not enter easily into our calculations.
Right. Then you get theories. There's psychological calculations, there's sociological, there's media biases. That's where everybody starts making up theories about why we can't make the leap. You know, McLuhan has his reason why. Others might say, well, the Nazis took over, and they're not going to let you, and they're mafias and that. So the whole range of interpretation, a lot of the debate is about why we can't recognize what you just said.
Yeah, and then he goes on to say, as soon as we want to act reasonably, we have to consider the utility of our actions. Utility implies an advantage, a maintenance, or growth. Now, if it is necessary to respond to exuberance, it is no doubt possible to use it for growth. But the problem raised precludes this. Supposing there is any growth possible, what is to be done with the seething energy that remains? To waste it, obviously not to use it. And yet what we have is a draining away, a pure and simple loss, which occurs in any case. For the first, the excess energy, if it cannot be used for growth, is lost. Moreover, in no way can this inevitable loss be accounted useful. It is only a matter of an acceptable loss preferable to another that is regarded as unacceptable. A question of acceptability, not utility. Its consequences are decisive, however.
That's pretty complicated. I'd have to read a couple times. What about I used to think that, okay, so you get a car factory going and a bunch of people are into doing it. And after a few months, a couple get bored with it. Well, you have faith, they go off and do something else, and there'll always be a new batch show up that are into cars. And almost like I says, relax, there's always something that's going to answer the issue, answer the problem. The answers will show up. I used to think, so people will rotate. They'll say, I don't want to work in Kansas. I'm going to go to New York, and maybe I'll get into publishing, and they'll try to get into it. If society, and people do this, right? They do jobs, they quit, and then they do something else. The flow, from Ion's perspective, is everybody's doing what they want to do. But we have a weird abstract contrast generator that says, no, you can't do that. You didn't pay for this. You didn't do that, blah, blah, blah. You didn't go to school. Why do we let that part in there? And if it's human nature to have a contrast all the time, then we're never going to get rid of that failure of leap to the new, better, reasonable situation.
We can't accept abundance. Yeah, it's a matter of accepting abundance without repayment.
Right.
Being okay with that condition. And we can only anticipate a subsistence level of guaranteed income.
It's not without repayment. It's acceptance of abundance without paying for it. You know,
that's
we
what
think
I mean.
We have to. Okay.
Yeah, including everybody. And that not filtering everybody out. Like, so much of our economy is about excluding people.
Yeah. And we do that because there's an individual who's rich who wants to maintain that identity and believes he's going to die in 70 years, and so he organizes the energies around preserving his little territory, whereas primitive people didn't do that. And they didn't believe they'd die. That helps, eh? They didn't believe that they were going to death was any big deal.
Well, it's not only the death, but when you can have anything that's, you know, when everything's available, there's no competition with anyone else over it. What do you really want?
Yeah, or would that be a question?
I don't think people would then, you wouldn't accumulate like we do now. There wouldn't be the hoarding and amassing of stuff because you can have whatever you want whenever you want it.
The hoarding and amassing is getting rid of that excess. You're storing it away and it's just dissolving. Like,
right, yeah, but there wouldn't be, but there wouldn't be that impulse when to hoard and amass when there's no status implied by it or any,
yeah, but update it, Madeline.
Fear
update
that
it.
There would be lack.
The technology is solving that. Most people value what they get on their cell phone, the videos or whatever the entertainment is, movies. You don't need to hoard it. It's all there in your phone. So the technology is favoring accepting, not
yes.
hoarding.
Yes, but the perception remains
yeah.
that we're limited, that our resources are limited, that, you know, maybe I can't have that iPhone that everybody has. There's always the idea that you're
yeah.
not going to get everything that everybody
There's
else
has. There's
a difference
between that digital and material stuff, Bob. I mean,
I know,
you know,
but
I don't
more
think
more
the guy,
people.
The guy under the freeway overpass doesn't give a shit about all that stuff in the ether that everybody has.
I know, but he often they do have a cell phone. You know, that's the joke, eh? A lot of third world poor nations have a cell
that
phone.
That is the truth.
Yes.
That's the truth. They do. Yeah.
The newest technology insists that we are not limited in any way.
Right. I was looking at a car ad. I just happened to see it before YouTube, and it was so fucking complicated. I didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. I would have to be trained if I ever got my license back or, you know, renewed my – I'd have to renew, get some lessons because I don't know how to drive these automatic cars anymore. But the stuff in there, boy, I have to be trained about what's in there. I said, I'm not fucking buying those things. I'd kill somebody. It's too complicated. It seems that way. All the stuff they were saying was in the new car, you know?
It's
I didn't say one thing
now,
they were
Bob.
Talking about. What?
It's a spaceship now. It's all the,
yeah.
it's the satellite. It's all the gadgets
and, what,
and buttons.
Isn't that one step before robot cars where I don't have to know anything and it'll drive itself?
Yeah.
So you're having supernova of gadgets that you can still have choice in. And that's the exaggeration just before we move into a new thing where you don't even have to know anything. You just the car drives you. You don't drive the car. So maybe that's the last Baroque spiral of complexity that I'm seeing in the ad.
Mm-hmm.
The dangling ganglia of the automobile.
Right. Okay. So let's say someone walked in here and said to us, 10 people, whatever, okay, one of you guys, I'm going to make a trillionaire. And you'll have all the responsibilities of that. But only one of you can do it. So who wants it? Who would take? What would you do? Would you compete with Gene and take it?
Well, I wouldn't want the responsibility, so no, I wouldn't.
Right. You would project
but I'd
that
probably,
to be draining.
I'd probably start making friends with Gene, though.
Yeah, I work part time for you. I want to still do my art. I still want to do my circuses, retinal circuses, but I'll be available on Wednesday and Friday for you.
Yeah.
So,
well, I like the idea of taking it on for, you know, and then passing it to the next person, doing it for a while, and then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's tribal.
Then giving
That's
it
what
to
they
Maddie.
Did.
Yeah.
Right. And our society, or at least in the difficult hardship centuries, the last couple of hundred years, you couldn't do that. You had to stay stuck with your job. Because someone else would take it from you, and then you'd be starving, you know, because back then, in the 19th century. Is society, so we're looking to see, when's society going to make a change? Maybe people are changing all over the place, and a lot of them are not changing. So we have a mass die-off, and then we still say, oh, there's still 2 billion people still here. They didn't get affected by it. You know, is that what's happening? You can't measure the degree of change that's in many different parts of human behavior that are happening. And Wolf Blitz and those guys try to tell us what's going on, and they're really failing at that point.
Well, and I want to say, will we catch up to technology? But how do you rephrase that, Bob? If our newest technology is insisting on limitless abundance for everybody, if we can change our perception enough to accept it.
Yeah, somebody was telling me that the world's not ready for Coldplay. Well, how do you know? When are we going to – okay, everybody ready? You can't find out when everybody's going to be ready. Take a poll. How many people
were willing to give up their job? You will.
Yeah, I'll know. But the are you ready to – you don't have to go to work anymore. Your energies will be taken care of. Can you handle that? A good chunk of people said, damn right, I can handle it.
Yes.
And then they turn out to be people
who
couldn't handle it. And then the ones who say, I can't handle it, they'd be forced to handle it, and they'd find out, hey, I can handle it. So maybe the same ratio would stay. It's always 50-50, it seems to me. It's always 50-50.
Yeah, people are jumping in and people are jumping out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but what you just read from Bataille seemed ridiculously complex. I mean, too many words. I don't know what he said. He was talking about this, that, and something else, and then there was too much of this. That's what I was going to read. Ever think about connotation versus denotation? Have you worked on that one?
Yeah.
No.
Right?
Oh, wow.
Who said yeah?
Madeline.
Oh, Madeline's been working on denotation. Okay, you're the expert.
I don't know about working on it, but, I mean, I think I know the difference.
Okay, say what you think the difference is. Denotate and connotate.
Well, denote would directly refer to something, and connote would kind of imply it. Yeah.
Yeah, suggest. Connotation is suggestion. Denotate is definite statement of what is.
Yeah.
So listen to this. So I'm reading this book, Semiotics of Semiotics: Connotative and Metalinguistic. The denotative level always remains, Barthes observes, and is the condition of the possibility of discourse, the carrier of connotation. Barthes refers to connotation as a cap on denotation, which is not exhausted in the process, while Baudrillard refers to connotation as an effect of denotation, the relation of staggering, setting up an infrastructure, superstructure-type distinction. But even this observation does not do justice to Barthes' penchant for building towers of signifying systems, for he adds another level to the tower. On the first level, there is real code, an object or image, the perception of which entails action, above which is a second level of denotation, or linguistic, or terminological specification consisting of sentences and propositions. And thirdly, a rhetorical system of phrases that is pure connotation. Of course, there's more to come, but reaching new heights does not change anything. Now, I read that. I assume you didn't understand what the fuck they're talking about. I read that as that's what the Bataille quote sounded like to me. Did you follow anything what I said there, Madeline? Don't say you did. You did not, right? I've probably even read it too fast.
I think I got lost after the Towers of Signifiers because I really liked that image.
Anyway, so that's what I'm reading, that complexity. But once you get into it, really pay attention, you start to get what it means. But that's why Bataille sounds very complicated. I'd have to read it there.
Yeah.
French love their words, that's for sure.
Yeah. And that's a translation. So what do you want to read some of it again? I was trying to get what is. I figured this is the same problem as everybody else, or the perceptual problem to get to the new recognition or consensus. So he used a lot of crazy words to talk about what we can say simply. So do it again. I'd like to hear if it's possible to figure out something there. This is your second quote.
You want me to reread what I read or something else?
Yeah.
it here just a sec.
Yeah, it was a bunch of excess. Let's find out if it's a waste or not.
Okay. The necessity of losing that excess energy that cannot be used for a system's growth. At first sight, it is easy to recognize in the economy, in the production and use of wealth, a particular aspect of terrestrial activity regarded as cosmic phenomenon. A movement is produced on the surface of the globe that results from the circulation of energy at this point in the universe. The economic activity of man appropriates this movement, making use of the resulting possibilities for certain ends. But this movement has a pattern and laws with which, as a rule, those who use them and depend on them are unacquainted. Thus the question arises, is the general determination of energy circulating in the biosphere altered by man's activity? Or rather, isn't the latter's intention vivitated by determination of which it is ignorant, which it overlooks and cannot change? Man's disregard for the material basis of his life still causes him to err in a serious way. Humanity exploits given material resources by restricting them as it does to a resolution of the immediate difficulties it encounters, a resolution which it has hastily had to define as an ideal. It assigns to the
What, his phone die? Did my phone die?
He's gone.
No, I think his phone died.
James.
It doesn't matter. It was ridiculous. The first part sounded like he was reading something. He was reading the wrong thing. I didn't hear anything about universe and cosmos for the first time. Did you?
Well, they talked about systems in nature, about the way energy moves, and the question was, does man alter that, or is he unwittingly subject to it?
Right. And what's that got to do with this perception of the economy?
Well, man thinks that he is controlling the flow of energy when, in fact, he might be subject to something that he doesn't understand.
Oh, and that's what the cosmos nature force thing was wondering?
I think so.
Hmm.
We think we've built these structures and that we control them, but in fact they might be controlling us in ways that we're not perceiving.
Right, so when I'm in a mood for simple explanations, I'll read McLuhan. If I'm in the mood for complex stuff, I'll read this Baudrillard book or semiotics book. And they're two different moods. It's almost like when you start reading complex stuff, you're having a game with yourself to see if you can get it.
Yeah.
And then you're happy when you get it, or you think you get it. But then you tell someone else, and you read it to them, and they have a totally different view of than you do of what it was about.
Mm.
You know, it's like humanity's been is at the bus station waiting for the bus to come, and the last 10,000 years has been people arguing over whether to get on the bus or not. And
no,
they never even got on the bus.
They were all just pretending they were going somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So the whole variety of human behavior, they never fucking got on the bus. It's like people have been arguing for all time about this and that. And then sneaking off from the argument and doing something, inventing something, creating a service, and acquiring some wealth on the side, and it didn't get noticed until you actually then had it all. Let's see. Oh, maybe I better check if Jason came back. Demute him. He was making some great contributions there. Ah, there he is. Sorry, Jason. I forgot to go over and demute you. So, do you know where you went off?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, you want to just finish the last couple or whatever, even though it made no sense so far?
Where were they? Or I found a better one. The title is called War Considered as a Catastrophic Expenditure of Excess Energy. And he starts off, incomprehension.
He thinks excess energy is okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's everywhere.
Right.
And then he goes, incomprehension does not change the final outcome in the slightest. We can ignore or forget the fact that the ground we live on is little other than a field of multiple destructions. Our ignorance only has this incontestable effect. It causes us to undergo what we could bring about in our own way if we understood. It deprives us of the choice of excrudation, E-X-U-D-A-T-I-O-N, that might suit us. Yeah, exude. It deprives us of the choice of an exusion that might suit us. Above all, it confines men and their works to catastrophic destructions. For if we do not have the force to destroy the surplus energy ourselves, it cannot be used. And like an unbroken animal that cannot be trained, it is this energy that destroys us. It is we who pay the price of this inevitable explosion.
Sounds like people can't take too much reality. They can't take too much energy.
Yeah, well, it's like people are always like running around and need more energy, but then they lay down in their bed and they can't sleep because they have too much energy. They never got rid of it during the day.
I don't know. It sounds a lot like McLuhan to me in the sense that the stuff we create does things to us that we don't understand.
Right. When they created radio, they had a whole bunch of new information, music, fun new experiences, and then that caused an identity crisis, which leads to the inevitable war. So, yeah, they get this energy, then they don't know new energy from the new, like there's new energies from Web 2.0, and then people get all frustrated because they can't, you know, discharge it. So then they go back into an old fight to discharge it. But that's what you just said. The McLuhan point is right. You bring in a new medium, it causes new social energies.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the whole youth quake of the 60s, of the baby boomers, was, hey, we're all watching TV all over the world. We can organize ourselves on a global basis. You know, that was the new energizing that TV did to people. And then they got their own content on there, their own music. And then what interrupted? All these other media environments with other fans of other older systems. They weren't going to let anybody get all carried away with a new system. Even though the kids were right about an energizing of television, because eventually by the 70s, their parents all just sort of got old and watched TV. They didn't translate into society. They didn't go running around and trying to connect with other people, but they got more and more involved with TV. I remember in the 50s, when TV came in, people would like watch one program a week or something, you know? And they might even feel guilty about that because it was such an odd, free medium. And by the 70s and 80s, from my perspective, people were watching too much TV, but they couldn't stop. So that's where how I understood McLuhan is saying that, you know, it creates new environment. It's like oxygen. It's like body processes. You can't stop. You can't stop your body. And the new organs is added to it.
But if you get stuck in one mode, then you get a blockage.
Yeah, that's what McLuhan was saying, hey? And some of his friends say, like Frank Zagroni, turn off TV for 6 months so people remember other energizing media. But he couldn't get to a position of control to implement that. But it sort of was the obvious answer. Things were just getting too much information, so why not turn off this thing for a while, see what happens to people? So that, and then that you see technology is inevitable. That's what Ian was saying in that futurist debate that Ian did with that guy, that German guy who was, what, in Rotterdam or something? Ian was saying, look, technology is coming regardless of what you have to think about it. Your issue is how you're going to adapt to it. And they were almost saying you can't adapt to it unless you have our products. So, you know, do you think, you guys think the technology is inevitable, that we're going to become two-thirds metallic?
I fucking hope not.
See, the book guy. Yeah, we just heard from the book archetype. Let's hear from
the body. The chemical body, man. The chemical body. You got to respect the chemical body.
Yeah,
well,
see,
it can be any kind of chemical. Why does it have to be you know, yeah. blood and skin and
what,
stuff.
Canadian. Why does it have to be Canadian metal? Why can't it be intergalactic metal?
Yeah.
Why can't it just be, that's why I don't like the chemical body. Why not the biological body? Why does it have to be the chemical body?
Well,
metal is biological.
Chemistry is what we're made up of under the hegemony of science, right? They make a big deal out of our chemistry. Everything's chemistry or subtext of that. If you include biology, sure, biochemistry. I'm just saying it's a model of our physical self, because I imagine that chemistry, that regular 3D world chemistry, does not apply to the astral plane. That's another body, the astral body. It's a different makeup, different ingredients.
I think, yeah, having a metallic body only makes you squeamish if you're really identified with your physical body already.
Yeah. I think.
Well, and we can't.
I think accepting.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say
we can't anticipate what that even looks like if a cyborg body. We can only guess based on our current parameters of what that is. Like, I'm curious.
Well, think about it right now. Like, our body is 90% water. So would it seem that different if it were 90% metal, really? I mean, we're already taking in all these minerals from Carolyn.
Yeah, you could do it, but that's a huge risk. Like, you're putting your life in the hands of some corporation that has, like,
Bob and
putting
Carolyn.
Some... yeah,
I'm
but I guess if you're talking
to,
like,
in the hands of Bob and Carolyn, and the one thing, like, Jason, my skin... And we've all commented, I'm really curious what's happening to my skin, because I'm becoming less and less vulnerable to heat and burns. And any number of us talk about, we just simply don't burn ourselves. We can't burn ourselves.
Well, McLuhan talks about how, because of the externalization of technology, we're losing touch with the body, and that's why the body takes such a precedent these days, because we are losing track of our body. So that's why people are trying to hold on to it. But if you start putting, like, neural lace inside of you, or the chemical body is still there, and it's the ground for all the other bodies. You can't have an astral body without the chemical body. You can't have a chip body without a chemical body.
Can't you? I mean, look at all those dead people still talking on the computer.
I suppose
we're limited there.
I think that's the the chip body. That's the Android meme. Replaying it. I don't think it's.
Yeah, and. That doesn't end when the chemical body does.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to get there eventually, so why not hold on to the chemical body as long as possible? I just don't want to, like, put... There's one thing to use all this technology externally to me, but it's a whole other ball game once you start putting it inside your body. Then you're, like, giving yourself up to these corporations, and hopefully they... keep the patches and the bugs fixed, and, like, if you didn't pay for the new upgrade, then you're gonna shut down and you can't interact, and so it, like, creates this huge divide again of power relations. And
if you don't renew your subscription,
even though you're educated, you're a conservative. They define conservatives, they don't trust humans. Humans have sin. You don't trust the corporations to, you know, keep you in mind. So you have a conservative view of humanity.
I think, like, all knowledge is embodied knowledge. Like, and if you lose track of the chemical body, which a lot of people do, like, you're gonna not be grounded.
Yeah, but you just have to talk to Carol to find out that people don't know anything about their bodies. Like, what are you protecting? You wouldn't know. People don't protect themselves already.
Yeah.
They act ridiculous. You see that around.
I know,
Carol's
for sure. They eat fast food. I don't even know how they're called fast food because if you consume it all the time, you're going to die. So I don't know how you can call that food. But.
And then Ayn comes along and says, well, they survive on other energies. Doesn't matter, they survive on that. You know, people who have good food, it ain't good either. It's got nothing in it, Carol would say, the organic food, unless you're real careful in how you grow it. So you're defending. So it's a matter of who thinks it's gone too far. I think it was a Zen thing where this guy dragged his father along someplace, and his father got mad. He says, I didn't drag my father this far. And so, like, each generation drags the father further, and each generation protests that I didn't drag my father this far. You know, so you're wondering whether we've boiled over or not. I mean, you got people. Worrying that, you know, Bill Joy and these guys worry that we are going to not be here. Humans are going to disappear in the next 20 years. They see they're involved in the chip industries. They know it, and they panicked. Remember that guy? His name was Bill Joy of Sun Systems. He came out a few years ago and said, man, I'm getting hell out of here because we're wiping people out. But Carol would say, oh, well, it started 50 years ago. That's why we're dying. So you got to look at what you think you know that measures how far we've gone. You've got to be very honest about that, Jason. How would you know?
Yeah. Well, you got to read your croaker, I suppose.
Well, croaker says that we're long gone. We're just seeing remnants of surplus flesh. That's his language for it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you got to contrast that with John Zerzan.
What's he say?
About getting back to hunter-gatherer lifestyles.
Yeah, he thinks he can
get rid of mediums. Getting rid of mediums.
Right.
Getting close as possible to authentic experience. The direct experience.
You believe? He believes he can get back there. That's crazy.
Well, not necessarily to stay there, because it's really hard to stay there. I mean, I guess in certain parts of the world, you could go live off the land. We're pretty lucky here in Western Canada. That's still somewhat of a possibility. But for how much longer, it's hard to say. I don't know.
Yeah,
Fukushima
is
raining down.
I couldn't do it. I'm not used to working that way. But if I was forced to do it, I might. I'm pretty adaptable. I might like it after a while. You know?
Yeah.
We actually don't know whether we could take it.
It's the original leisure society.
Yeah. But I'm not waiting for it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm going for.
Hey, where are you going to go? where are you going to do this? Vancouver Island or what? Where is this?
Yeah, yeah. Nautical nomad on a sailboat, maybe.
Okay. You got an image getting on a sailboat and somehow have a way of eating while doing it.
Yeah, either live off the ocean or have like somewhat a couple home bases at different parts.
So you pick up your RNA drop. Yeah, you'd have to want to eat our stuff, right?
Oh, well, I still haven't. Still haven't
stuff.
Tried.
What?
I still haven't tried.
You haven't tried our stuff?
No.
Jeez. Tell them, people. Tell them what he's forgotten.
Your skin still burns, then, Jason. Your skin still.
Yeah,
burns.
He's still gonna. Jason's gonna die.
That's too bad.
Jason's trying to survive. He's gonna be the first to go.
No, I got my own medicine.
My skin still burns.
Well, Madeline, you're difficult. You like that. You.
No, I don't. I thought it wouldn't by now. But it does.
It's a perception thing, then. Gotta be, Madeline.
On that recording I listened to, I think Ayn said our cells or like our body's consistency will become rock-like. And then I thought of the white stone.
What was that word? See, what did you say?
Rock, like a rock. A rock.
A rock?
Rock-like. Yeah. Rock-like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, all metallic.
So, No, well, could metallic be what they offer you on the outside, but you can, you rock like already. You said we already think we mushy, and I thought about you bringing up the mushy piece earlier, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, he said we think it's all mush, but it's already it's more rock like.
Well, what you're saying, our products will turn you into rock inside?
That's just on that mitochondria recording that I listened to Ion speaking to you.
You know about that, Carol? We'll become rock-like. I wonder what that is.
Rock stars,
yes.
Well, the product, it's referred to as the white stone, so could it be almost like stone-like?
Word.
And then there's a lot of reference in the Bible of water coming out of stone, and we've got water consistency as well. I don't have a finished.
If we were going to go there, you see, life magazine.
Am I blurry? Was I blurry, Carol?
Tangled in my hair.
Was I blurry, Carolyn? Good. That's the way fucking John sounds like to me.
Am I better now?
Yes. Yeah, keep it more distant or something.
Yeah, I'm putting it away from my head.
So, well, there it is. There's so much of crazy stuff I have said that I have forgotten or didn't hear. I mean, it's good you guys go through it and find these statements. I didn't know you said we become more rock-like. That's crazy. I object to that. I'm with Jason. I'm getting on my sailboat and getting the fuck out of here. No more drops for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Rock-like, for me, it means, like, people who become sedentary.
Yeah, he just blah, no, stagnant. They're stuck on the beach.
Yeah.
Well, if it's already like that, because he said it's already like
for
that,
sure.
Then
the body
would rather stay. Yeah.
What's already like that? We're already sedentary? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because we're already ascending and on the drops. So those effects are already taking place.
What, the rock
and, yeah. I would hope by now that's already taken place in me. Yeah.
Yeah, next time you get surgery, when they start putting utensils in you, they'll all break. I go, what the fuck?
No, next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that won't happen.
Please don't.
They'll start hammering you in their tweezers. Well, Jason,
it's sort of better than metallic, I would think. Metallic sounds so.
Well, let's go back to this point. How do we get? Well, we don't get people to make the perceptual shift. Those that will. Those don't. It's interesting. I see that people require contrast. That might be what I've learned from Ion. More of the contrast.
Or novelty.
Well, they want novelty, but their limits, and they like to stop things, and they want to stop sign everything at some point. And they're not going to go any further.
Not too much novelty.
Right. And then anybody who's into more novelty upsets them.
Yeah.
So you know, when I hear Bataille, the guy is basically talking to himself. What you could never present that in any mass movement. Raise his questions. He's got crazy questions in there. You know, McLuhan kept it real simple. He's almost like not a good writer. He just reminded people, okay, look, the books really changed us. You didn't know that, but I can prove to you that books change you. Therefore, new media is going to change you. Do you want that change? That's all it was. I'm looking at the very dumb Dr. Dean who's eating. He's looking at me, expectantly waiting for me to say something wise to her. Weren't you? Wouldn't you look at me expectantly? No? Well, I misinterpreted you. Have you got something wise to say? No, because you're eating. Okay, back to you guys. I'm not getting any help here.
Well, it's interesting in the beginning.
Isn't it great I was able to prove there were stages of apprehension by going to page 18 of Phineas Wake? That was pretty good, eh?
Yeah.
Because that was Gene's question at the start of the show. Well, what are these stages of apprehension? Then I had them right there.
And, just the first, 5-6 words. In the ignorance that implies impression.
Right.
Just that right there.
And, that is communication between two people. When you start to think you're actually getting through to the other person and they understand you, when Adam is reaching out to God, that's the fall. When you actually think there's something being pressed on the other person or yourself. It's an ignorant state when you think something's being impressed upon somebody.
It's just simply the act of creation.
That proves me. I thought I made a big breakthrough on the Adam God handshake, but Joyce had already said it. And that's what McLuhan said. He and his colleagues, or Eric, they would make a discovery, and then they'd go and check out Phineas Wake, and they imagined every time that Joyce got there first. I mean, we may not agree with what they saw in there, but they, for their purposes, saw that he said it already. That was a weird experience for them. And you'll find that in my case. Any brilliant ideas you guys get, including Jason, over the next 10 years, you'll find out I already said it. You're not going to come up with anything new that I didn't already say. Okay, let that be a warning to your own self-worth as an individual original artist. You're up against somebody who has really covered a lot of the ballpark.
Yeah, and that when you go looking for it to prove it, it'll be right there. It'll just appear.
Yeah.
Yeah, even me now with this stuff, I'm reminding you of conversations you've already had, Bob.
That's right, where I said it.
Yeah.
You ready for that, Jason? Or is that why you're going to get on your sailboat and run away? You can't be original.
Ready for what?
You're ready to accept the fact I got there first and there's nothing new you're going to come up with to make you valuable as an artist?
Bob, you've got 70 years on me. Let's talk in 70 years when I'm your age. Jesus.
Yeah, and I've been working
hard. Get on
hard.
The drops, Jason. Get on the drops.
Yeah, you won't even be in the game.
70 years.
You won't even be in the game unless you're on the drops, buddy.
Well, then I'll just be a drop in the bucket.
So that was pretty good that you typed up all those quotes, though. Or do you scan that?
I scanned.
Ah, you can scan it, eh? Well, that's easy.
Well,
you know
no, it's a PDF. It's a PDF online. Is that what you mean?
Oh. Well, wait a minute. No. The Batai. Oh, you just copied it.
Yeah, I just pulled it off. Yeah. A PDF. I didn't download it or anything.
If you had wanted a particular quote from Batai and it wasn't online, then you'd find another quote. That may be what you did. You were going to just find anything Batai says and put it up there, as long as it was available. Whatever you could find.
Well, I was going from the accursed chair. Mm. And then, I guess it was hard to copy and paste that stuff that I put into the text earlier. But before, I was just reading
hard?
It off the PDF. It was hard, yeah. The PDFs, you have to... You can't do individual words. You can't highlight
individual
words.
That's right. You can't get the PDF. So how did you post that stuff you posted under J?
That was just from the Wikipedia.
Okay. So that's available. Look at that, guys.
Yeah.
We come to another exciting laboratory closed. The lab is closing down. What is that line? You can't go home. You can't stay here, but you can't go home or something like that.
Thanks, Paul.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Hey, we didn't get much from Michael this time. Stay around for the post-green room wrap-up. Michael, we And remember, no problem. You can. Remember, you don't have to sleep on it.
Nothing to hide, forget.
Nothing to hide.
Figure out. Nothing to conceal. Or carry, break, wear down, wear out, or bury, sweetheart.